All right, I'm Sam Shapiro interviewing Dick Maul. The date is November 2nd, 2011, and it's for Professor Scanlon's class on the 40th anniversary of Women at Bowdoin. So my first question is, what kind of very immediate changes occurred when the administration decided to admit women to Bowdoin, and what sort of policies or quotas were you given?
Well, first of all, maybe we better say who I am and what I was doing there in the administration.
Yes.
My name is Richard Maul, M-O-L-L, and I was director of admissions at Bowdoin from 1967 until 1976. And when I went to Bowdoin, I entered a job in a all-male college that was a sort of a locker room atmosphere, trying to be a little Dartmouth, and a very small college. It was a college of 900 students. It was not as selective as the faculty thought it was and the students thought it was. It had somewhat a better idea of itself than indeed was the real case. A lot of people around Bowdoin thought there was a little four, not a little three. Amherst, Williams, Wesleyan, and Bowdoin, but no one in the little three thought that. So Bowdoin had something of an idea of itself, which I think was somewhat exaggerated, and we weren't as interesting as I thought we might be having women. And consequently, the admissions office here was one of the real forces to make Bowdoin coeducational in the first place. And as you're suggesting, that happened in the late 60s with more of a group of women starting to graduate from in the early 70s. Now, ask me again what the question is about the administration and so forth.
All right, I guess just to tag off what you were saying, you said that the administration had a large, or not the admissions office had a large part in pushing Bowdoin towards coeducation. If you could explain that a little bit more.
I was given enormous freedom by the president of Bowdoin at the time, whose name was Stacy Coles. And the admissions office, in a way, becomes the ears of the college. What you hear about the place on the road is very candid and means a lot. And a lot that we didn't have at Bowdoin College is probably because we didn't have women. For example, we had very limited programs in the arts, in music. We had sort of a raucous social scene, and many of us thought it would be somewhat more even and balanced and mature if there were women. And consequently, the administration at the time, Stacy Coles as president, and the board of trustees at the time were very interested in hearing what the admissions office had to say. And we thought we'd be a much more balanced place and become indeed a more selective place if we became coeducational, and that was a major proponent, I think, in the college finally deciding to become co-ed.
What policy changes occurred within the admissions office once the decision to go coeducational came down?
I don't recall any policy changes. We had no limit on the number of women or the number of men if we were trying to even out of Class A, we didn't have nearly the depth of applicant pool for women that we had for men. And consequently, in the early years, our challenge was to get out on the road, find more women who wanted to apply to Bowdoin College. And that was more of a challenge than I thought it would be, quite frankly. The first day that I had been given permission, and knowing we were going co-ed, given permission to go out and represent us as a co-ed college, I went to Portland, Maine, the capital of our state, to the two high schools, Portland High School and Deering High School, thinking that every woman in the class would want to look at Bowdoin College now that it was co-ed. And that was a very humbling experience because no one came to my meeting at either Portland High School or during high school. So after I was humbled in those two meetings, I started down Exchange Street where I'd parked my car. And I went into a little store called the Paper Patch. And it was sort of at closing time at this stage. And there was only one young woman in the Paper Patch. She was the cashier. And I said, "You look like a high school senior to me. Are you a high school senior?" And she said, "Yes, I'm high school senior at Portland High School." "Well, I'm Dick Maul, and I'm the director of admissions at Bowdoin College, and we've just gone co-ed." And she said, "I heard that." I said, "Might you be interested?" She said, "Gee, I don't think so. I'm sort of all set to go to Wellesley. And I like the idea of a women's college." And so we talked and we talked and we talked. And she ended up being one of the members of the first four-year classes here. She then became director of admissions of Wheaton College as it went co-ed from a women's college to a co-ed college, including men. And now she's vice president of Wheaton. And I remember that was the first woman that I was able to recruit, so to speak, for Bowdoin.
Mm-hmm. So she seems like she had a very strong character, and I think one thing that's become apparent through a lot of these oral histories that we've been conducting this semester is that the general sense is that a lot of the women you admitted for the first several years were very driven, very strong personalities, very tough and gritty. I was wondering if that was something you actively sought to do, or if that's just kind of which women chose to come to Bowdoin.
I think it was the women. Of course, we were looking for mature girls in high school to handle a fairly raucous men's college. And I think women who wanted to risk coming to any men's college as the first female class, or almost the first, were pretty strong and pretty adventuresome. Most of us in admissions think that high school senior girls are much more mature than high school senior boys. And so we start with that. But I think also that these young women had to be particularly mature to want to risk going to an all-men's college. It was not easy for them at all.
Mm-hmm. I guess, did you talk to them at all about what kind of challenges they were going to be facing entering what you've described as a raucous all-male college? Or did you, I guess, what kind of stuff did you talk about when you were interviewing them?
It was 40 years ago. I don't require that kind of knowledge of myself in memory. But I didn't know what they were going to face, quite frankly. I thought we had a lot of very immature young men here. So I didn't know how they'd behave around the introduction of 17, 18-year-old women to Bowdoin College. I had no idea. So we just warned them that it probably was going to be a little rough coming into an all-male environment, and that's all I remember.
Do you recall whether the 12th College Exchange provided any sort of a baseline for you when you started admitting women for the four-year college?
It had given us sort of confirmation of the point I just made, that girls coming out of high school are more mature than boys coming out of high school, and our luck with the few women we had here who were first 12th College Exchange women was that they were mature, they found their way, they seemed to like the place, and Bowdoin seemed to respond well to them. I wasn't sure how our almost all-male faculty would respond to them. Clearly we had faculty members who were not in favor of coeducation. Clearly. By the way, I later went to Vassar to become Dean of Admissions and make them co-ed in the opposite direction. Vassar had a majority of women on the faculty who did not want boys in their classes. Bowdoin did not have a majority of faculty men who did not want women in the classes here. Well, we had some. So our experience with the 12th College Exchange was a good one. And it made us feel comfortable with wanting to have more women here.
Did the addition of extra faculty in certain departments and the creation of certain departments, did that precede women entering the college, or did it happen sort of at the same time as a way to make the two work together?
I think more or less the same time. Bowdoin, because it's small, has been very responsive to student needs and student preferences, socially and academically. The creation of teams that we never imagined at some point we would have had. The creation of majors and the creation of new subjects that were not traditionally part of the old standard traditional curriculum for boys. So I think that the we did not make a lot of changes before a large number of the young women arrived, but we certainly had our ear to the ground on what they wanted that we didn't have.
Did you feel that, especially from alumni who had children applying to Bowdoin, that there was a negative response to women being admitted to the college, or that they felt that there was a loss of prestige of the college thereby?
Most of our alumni happen to have girls as well as boys. And that was the big factor in most of the alumni saying, oh, this isn't so bad. Janie, get ready. Let's get you a Bowdoin cap. And that was that was a great point of equilibrium in the point of view of families. I'm going to keep, if you don't mind, referring to Vassar, because Vassar was a very famous all-women's college, and the mothers of Vassar students, I mean of young people, but mothers who had gone to Vassar, who had kids in high school, did not want their sons to go to Vassar. I mean, it was night and day in Bowdoin's reaction to coeducation versus Vassar. And it's something of a sexist thing, I must say. And that, to me, was a huge difference. Bowdoin had good responses from the alumni in terms of coeducation. Probably largely because Bowdoin sort of likes to do anything it can do to keep up with Williams and Amherst, in that order or reverse order. They have always seemed to be our role models. And they were talking coeducation also, so we were part of a noble pack.
Mm-hmm. You talked earlier about traveling and kind of recruiting heavily women to come to Bowdoin. I guess, were you targeting any specific groups, mostly in the Northeast or upper middle class, people who could afford Bowdoin, or did you still have that freedom that you were talking about earlier, working within the admissions department to admit whoever you wanted, regardless of race, religion, socioeconomics?
Oh, there were no limitations. I thought it was probably going to be easiest. This is just I thinking to myself. It's probably going to be easiest to go to fairly sophisticated high schools where people know the quality and the reputation and prestige of Bowdoin than it is less sophisticated high schools where I have to sort of introduce Bowdoin first and then the thought of women coming to a men's college. So I first went to a lot of Maine high schools, and so did my staff. And then I immediately took off on a tour very early on of the more sophisticated girls' schools in New England, because they knew the reputations of colleges. And I must say that was the best response I had anywhere. They were immediately turning on to going to any number of men's colleges that were now admitting women. Places like Miss Porter's school and any number of girls' schools, largely in New England. I think Miss Porter's because they had such a large number of applicants early on.
Mm-hmm. Did you see that sort of a reception from the people who were trying to recruit change, the first 5 or so years moved on and more women began to come to Bowdoin?
I think the Bowdoin women that were early here had a better experience than they might have imagined. And they spread the word pretty quickly that Bowdoin was okay for women. I think some other colleges, like Dartmouth, had more of a problem. And I'm proud of Bowdoin that we seemed to be fairly accepting and comfortable when the first young women arrived. We had good training through the women that we'd had in the 12th College Exchange. So the word spread largely through our students themselves. And it took a few years to get a viable applicant pool, but it was easy looking back on it. The reverse of going to Vassar and trying to get men to go to a women's college. The nation is so sexist that young women can go to men's colleges and feel great about it. But young men don't feel they can go to women's colleges, and their parents and grandparents don't feel so great about it. So we were years at Vassar developing a male applicant pool. Bowdoin, the old men's college, found it very easy to develop a female applicant pool.
I guess how many, roughly, of those applicants, or how much of an impact do you think the Bowdoin Society, or the Society of Bowdoin Women, had when you began to go coeducational?
What do you mean by the Society of Bowdoin Women?
Well, there was a Society of Bowdoin Women that was very, that was involved in bringing speakers to campus and had a lot of husbands go to Bowdoin. I was wondering if you, in the admissions department, had any interactions with them or influence from them.
Quite frankly, again, 40 years ago, I don't recall the Society of Bowdoin Women. But our alums, and we soon had female alums out there, were very active in interviewing for us as at any college, any private college.
How much as, you know, the first 5-10 years went by of admitting women at Bowdoin, how much did you talk to the student body and how much of an impact did the student body have in how you approached admitting women?
The word on the pathways and on the street around the campus, get as many as soon as you can. We like them. And they're doing well. And they're adding maturity and balance to Bowdoin College, particularly balance. Students seem to like them. And, you know, we even had an early period when fraternities here were co-ed. And that really added balance and was a lure to many young women who couldn't imagine going to college and being in a fraternity. So a lot of little things happened that were sort of unique to Bowdoin that made us a fairly appealing place to be. Also, the women early on started outperforming the men in the classroom, as we expected. And that made the faculty very, very happy, the more women we could have. So they were heavy on the admissions office in pressure to get more women here.
Were there any housing constraints or anything like that that restricted you in any way in admitting women or trying to get more and more to come?
The more we had, the more the housing office accommodated whatever the numbers were. Our first two Bowdoin administrators came just after we went co-ed. And one of them, a black woman by the name of Carol Ramsey, became the head of freshman housing. And she did an amazing job in accommodating the women and making the housing situation appealing and mature.
Mm-hmm. One thing I'm very curious about is the diversity amongst the women. I wanted to know, I think we talked earlier about whether it had an impact on who you were trying to recruit, but I'm more interested in what the actual diversity, what was reflected in the student body, and how students, male students, responded to what kind of diversity you brought in with the women.
Diversity was not at the front of our minds as we recruited women.
Okay.
We wanted just women. Anyone who was capable and talented and wanted to look at us seriously. And obviously, many of the first applicants were legacies. Their families knew about Bowdoin's coeducation first, from nearby high schools, from very sophisticated private schools that got the word quickly, and very sophisticated high schools, like Wellesley High School and Stuyvesant High School and other good high schools around the nation. Diversity came later. We were the diversity with a capital D was just women at Bowdoin. That's as diverse as Bowdoin's ever been.
Did you notice any really visible changes in that first decade, just on the campus, that you think that you can attribute to yourself working the admissions office?
The admissions office became more gender representative ourselves in admissions officers. I immediately hired two women to represent us. And the other changes that one felt around the campus were the balance that was almost immediately provided by what women demanded to have. And that was more academic and social input in the broader field of the arts. I'm dazzled. I've been away from Brunswick, Maine, or I was away from Brunswick, Maine for about 30 years after I left being director of admissions here and went to Vassar and other places. Coming back now here to live, because it was my favorite college town ever, as a retiree, I'm just dazzled by what Bowdoin is versus what Bowdoin was before the women, and particularly in the arts. It's not lost on me and a lot of other men around here, however, that it's the women that are bringing home most of the athletic titles also. So in any number of fields, they've added excellence and variety.
I guess you mentioned athletics, and I know right at the outset for coaching women's teams, it was kind of on a volunteer basis for a few specific people. I wanted to know, was there a great demand from women when you first started admitting them for athletics to become something that was available to them?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We were, you know, the as we started to have women, women's college athletics around the nation was starting to mature as a field. And Title IX was soon thereafter, and fair play in hiring coaches and money spent on men versus women in athletics become equal. And so it was, the young women here had a lot of, applied a lot of pressure because they knew the outside world would apply it for them, including legally, to have equal opportunity in athletics, and a lot of pressure was on for athletics, for women. Partly because we'd been kind of a jock school for men, and there was a tradition here of winning games, and the first woman wanted to be part of that tradition.
John Cross, who wrote the piece this fall on the 12th College Exchange, he came to talk to us, and he said that amongst the changes at Bowdoin College during this period, women being admitted probably wouldn't fall right at the top, just in the greater context of you know, the Vietnam War and all of the kind of college-age unrest that was going on around the country. And I wanted to know what your take on that was, how women coming to Bowdoin factored in with everything else that was happening nationally.
John Cross is a brilliant researcher, and his grasp of Bowdoin and Brunswick is not to be excelled. But I disagree with the point of going co-ed as being the biggest factor at the time. Clearly, our making SATs optional in 1969 was the biggest thing that has ever happened to Bowdoin. The applicant pool tripled almost overnight. And suddenly we were considered a progressive college and alone in that progressive category of optional SATs. We became known as the Little Brown for a few moments in time. Brown was the first to create a very liberal grading policy. As I recall, a flunk would not be recorded, high honors, that sort of thing. We became the first in the more selective colleges not to tamper with our grading policy, but to make SATs optional. A week or so after that happened, the New York Times, in their second editorial on a Sunday, said victory at Bowdoin. It was a huge thing for this college. And most every newspaper in big cities in this nation had a big story about Bowdoin's going in the optional zone of SATs and why we did it. And consequently, that was the news. And by the way, they've just become co-ed and so forth and so on. We were going co-ed at the same time that everybody else was. We weren't very newsy in that regard. There was a flock of colleges going, selective colleges becoming co-ed. No one tampered with the SAT. And in the point of admissions policy, that was the biggest thing that happened to us.
Other than the expansion of the applicant pool, do you think having optional SATs did anything to bolster the pool of women that were applying to Bowdoin or entice them more?
Clearly. Many of the people who noticed that we made the SATs optional were people who had very high SATs, but they liked the policy that what one did in high school, whether you took the tough courses or not, whether you really were motivated academically in high school, was more important than how you did on a Saturday or two of testing, and that people could be tutored for the test and all that sort of thing. So a lot of people applauded this as being a more realistic analysis of a candidate for admission than being super test conscious, as most of our competitors were and are, I might add.
Okay. I guess you talked a little bit earlier about fraternities and the coeducation of fraternities and that being a really something that should draw women.
Or repel them.
What
repel
do you mean?
Any of their parents.
In your experience working in missions, I guess, what kind of experience did you find women in fraternities to have, and did you find that to really be something that they really loved or not?
Well, let's start with the fact that I'm personally biased.
Okay.
I went to a small college in Indiana and joined a fraternity, the fraternity of my brother, my father, and my uncle. And I loved the college, but I hated the fraternity. I just didn't like the fraternity experience, that I had to narrow myself down to my allegiance, basically, number one, to this social group. And I picked the wrong one in the first place, I think, even though my family had been a part of it. So I transferred to Duke for the last 2 years. And Duke had its share of fraternities, but I stayed out of that scene. And felt I had a much broader college education without the fraternities and sororities. And that was my bias coming to Bowdoin. The fraternities were more limiting than they were expansive. And yet I thought the idea here to make fraternities co-ed was ingenious, and just to try it out. I even went back to that Indiana college that I mentioned to try to talk them into making their fraternities co-ed because Bowdoin was having a good experience with it. It didn't last, and a couple of Bowdoin presidents toyed with doing away with fraternities, and that deed was done, and so here we are.
Okay. You've cited admissions as having a huge push towards making Bowdoin coeducational. What kind of an impact did you feel President Coles had at the time for making that push as well?
President Coles, and I was also here with Roger Howell. Mm-hmm. As president. President Coles was a true academic, and his field was science, and he was an academic figure here more than anything else. In terms of his involvement socially to the community life, he wouldn't hold a candle to, say, Barry Mills. But he was a wonderful, highly respected man of integrity, and his interest was the academic side. So the more I could do to up the academic ante, the better I was with President Coles, and he gave me a lot of freedom to do that. And by the way, the SAT option did that, including with people who had scores they were very proud of, but some of them chose to hide it.
You said that academically...
And let me just mention President Roger Howell also.
Mm-hmm.
He was next, and he was already a member of our faculty in history. A very young man, a brilliant man, and that continued the academic prominence here in terms of a president's priorities. Although Roger Howell did have a passion for ice hockey, and the admissions office had to follow suit.
Well, you've said that both of these men were very interested in academics. I'm wondering if they had any impact on admissions once women, you said, began to exceed men in performance in the classroom. If they were in any way involved in continuing to encourage more and more women or to try to get it more towards a parity in numbers representing the student
body. The two presidents I was here with, Howell and Coles, had one big thought in mind, make Bowdoin better academically. And the women were first in line to do that. Probably still are. That's a guess. They were most encouraging on coeducation by default because the women were doing so well academically.
Okay. You mentioned that you hired women right away in admissions. Did you feel that that was something that would aid in recruiting women or something that you felt was just a necessary change because you were including women in the college?
I thought it was probably the right thing to do. And I'm not sure it was. We found that several of our men on the staff seemed to be having a better success in attracting women and talking in schools than a couple of the women in the office. The first woman I hired was not successful at all, didn't like it, and left. Went on to a co-ed college in admissions. And the second woman I hired was magnificent, and she is still around Bowdoin as the counselor to pre-med students.
I guess that's pretty much what I want to know. Is there anything else that you would like to talk about or that you want to say that you haven't said already?
I've grown to know several women as mature women who were among the first female undergraduates here. And I think it was pretty rough for them. As I hear the tales now, Bowdoin was much tougher on the early women than I had guessed it was at the time I was here and they were here. That's point one. Some of the real ogres on the faculty, men, who didn't want the women here at all, became some of the great champions. We had an elderly professor of classics. Classics became a major that many of the top athletes at Bowdoin decided to major in because the one-man classics department was so good to them. And he made it enjoyable to be in classics. And there was a young African-American woman that came to Bowdoin by the name of Sadie Smith. I can't remember her class. She's now one of the vice presidents of Con Ed in New York City. She was the first woman to go to this man's classics classes. And she'd gone to a very poor high school, but they had Latin there. She always did well in Latin, so she wanted to major in it. And she set a new tone academically for what classics should be, not just for hockey teams, but, you know, for all the student body. And I was nearly in tears when I heard that when she graduated, this professor who probably didn't want her there in the first place, I'm only guessing, and then was quite taken by her and her academic excellence, gave her, when she graduated from Bowdoin, his old Bowdoin Latin notebook. His own personal, it was just such a moving gesture. And things like that happened. Very unexpectedly. To me, the greatest joy of coeducation has not only been how strong Bowdoin is in the arts, and I think that's largely due to women. Obviously, men have contributed, participated all the way along. But I'm really enjoying watching the women prevail in sports. Because when we first went co-ed, a lot of Bowdoin alums and undergrads said they'll never get it. They'll never get what they should be doing in college, like winning games. Well, they've gotten it, and they seem to be somewhat excelling, if I may say.
You mentioned that from talking to people that it seemed like the first few years were very rough for people or for women who came to the college. Can you expand on that a little bit?
What you mean by that? As I've heard from a couple of women who were very early here and were quite successful here, the housing situation was rough. Cracking some courses with the predominance of men and a male-oriented male faculty member was tough. The social life was tough, including the advances on them, it was just they came into a more. I know they were coming into a very male society, but I think some of them think that it was really more of a sexist society than they had anticipated.
Sexist in that women were ignored, discriminated, or that they were objectified, or how do you mean?
They objectified and I think for quite some time we're sort of thought to be second-class citizens. You know, we're a strong old men's college. We're little Dartmouth. Do you belong here? There was that tone for a while that was most unfortunate, I think.
When you were admitting women, did you at all consider how they would interact or how the campus would respond to them in light of the fact that there were women who were either bussed up to Bowdoin or there was Westbrook kind of down the road, that Bowdoin was very, and those were the interactions most Bowdoin men had with women?
Well, the Bowdoin interactions with women were quite stilted. Exchange weekends at men's colleges and women's colleges. The quote-unquote rookies down the road who I knew many of them and many of their parents. Great young women. However, most of them had not jumped the academic hurdles that many Bowdoin students had, and there was that difference. Suddenly, the young men here were going to class with equals who happened to be of the other gender. Can I tell you the funniest thing that ever happened to me in the line of duty?
Sure.
One of the first days that I went out recruiting, I told you I went to Miss Porter School, famous school. Stuffy, if we might say, far less so now. Jackie Kennedy went there and a whole line of people whose names we recognize. And no seniors came out to see me that year, but a large group of juniors came out to see me. And Amy was the name of the guidance counselor I'm a rather short man, and she towered over me. And she was an absolute delight. And took me to lunch. They have a wonderful lunch there, a buffet lunch there. So I talked to the girls, and she heard the talk, and then she took me to lunch, and then I was leaving the school. And I was running off to some other school. But as I left and got in my car, I said, you know, Amy is one of the first counselors I have to get up to visit Bowdoin. She doesn't know what this college is all about and how great it might be for some of her girls. So I rushed around to some other schools. I came back one day to work on my dictating machine. A bunch of letters come in from parents, from counselors, etc. And I had a letter from Amy on sort of a hot lemon stationery. And Amy said, I would love to come visit Bowdoin during Christmas vacation. And could I come see the campus? I said, oh, fabulous. Amy's going to come. You know, this is the counselor at this great school. So I wrote her back and I said, Amy, that won't work for me because we're going down to see my mother in Florida for Christmas, who is an older woman and an invalid. And so I have a better idea. Amy, why don't you, tongue-in-cheek, fly to Florida and join me on the beaches of Fort Lauderdale for Christmas vacation? And so I send the letter off. It's typed. Somebody signs it for me. I send it off to Amy. And lo, Amy turned out to be not the counselor, but a student who was applying or thinking of applying to Bowdoin. And her father called the president and said, do you realize what your dean of admissions, I mean? So that was a big event around. I called Amy to apologize and I said, do you know what happened? She said, do I know what happened? Everybody, every parent, every student in Miles knows what happened with the Bowdoin Direct of Admissions. End of story.
And that didn't affect anything at all? Everything
not at
smoothed
all.
Out?
Our president thought it was funny. I didn't for a few days.
I can imagine.
The girl did not apply, finally, to Bowdoin. I trust her father has something to say about that.
Well, I think unless you have anything else you'd like to share, it's been...
Nope. I can't tell you how lucky I was to come to Bowdoin as Director of Admissions at a young age, 32. I came here from a job at Harvard, and this was a great job, and I thought it was a great place. But now that I'm back, 40 years later, and seeing what Bowdoin is today, women have made this. The balanced, excellent place that it is. It was good when it was all male, but it's great now that it's co-ed. So I'm glad you're researching this particular topic. It's basic.
All right, well, thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome.